The Iron Flute, Case 100. Ison's 10-foot square. Ison wrote a poem on the wall of his room. 10 square feet of Ison.
When was it built?
Too steep to climb.
I can walk in as though it were flat.
If anyone enters,
watch your step.
He will become a great general.
Do not forget, there is another great general.
Umpo said of the poem, Ison was a born Zen master.
Applesauce.
A monk asked Umpo, what poem would you write for your room?
Good question.
Umpo replied by reciting his poem.
Imitator.
10 square feet of Suigon. Never had a door.
Difficult to enter.
Any monk who comes in.
Walking on the edge of a sword.
Immediately sees Suigon
skating on ice.
The monk bowed in homage and stood up.
What did he have to say?
Umpo said, did you see Suigon or not?
There is barbed wire all around.
The monk hesitated.
I told you he could not enter.
Umpo hit the monk's mouth with his hosu.
There, the door is open.
Genro said this. Ison's room is hard to see, but easy to enter. Suigon's room is easy to see, but hard to enter. I also have a poem in my room. Emptiness has neither in nor out. If there is neither in nor out, I ask you, monks, how can you enter?
I would not enter that room.
Then Genro's verse. Even a steep cliff has toeholds.
There is a flat part on the steep.
Flat ground hides a tiger trap.
There is a steep place on the flat.
Each established his monastery according to his home routine.
One has to do foolish acts to save others.
Golden deeds gleam even now.
Generation after generation carries troubles endlessly.
Well, several people told me, it's so nice when you don't have koans. Of course, the other day I talked about my life, which is certainly a koan. But I understand. And today's talk is full of them. Don't worry. We have Fugai here. Sixth day of our 47th anniversary session. This morning, I was looking out at the courtyard and I saw an array of delicate white clouds, just as one would see in a Tibetan tanka, a mandala. So beautiful, so intricate. Such a feeling of reciprocity. Isn't that what we are experiencing here? Everything offering, receiving, giving away, and finding new gifts. And a very powerful feeling of synchronicity. What is synchronicity?
Things happening at the same time.
Same time or
harmonious,
or the one time, one act, as tea ceremony puts it. Everything being time, each of us exactly one with each other, with time. This is a magical place, a season. This time. And a haiku came to mind. Synchronicity. Bonsho and Robin begin. Everyone joins in. That's our morning service, right? So appropriately, today is the last case of the iron flute, case 100. And many of you know I've been using this text, this collection for my Teisho in session here since 2013. So for the past 10 years, with some time out during the pandemic and during the year of the ox. The Iron Flute was originally compiled and published by a Soto master named Genro Oryu. In 1783. And his successor, Fugai Honko, added biting commentaries. And then in 1939, Nyōgen Senzaki began translating the book with the editing help of his disciple, Kangetsu, Ruth Fuller McCandless. And he continued working on it, even when imprisoned behind barbed wire at Heart Mountain from 1942 with the U.S. government packing away thousands of Japanese into these concentration camps. He used a typewriter that had been given to him before he left by Kangetsu, and he would send sections to her by mail to polish. And when he finally got out and returned to Los Angeles, they continued working together on it. And it was published by Charles E. Tuttle Company in 1964, 6 years after Nyōgen Senzaki's death. So today we meet one of my most treasured Zen masters. You know, some of you, that every now and then you meet up with a Zen master who somehow speaks to you in a way that is so, I don't know what the word is, just heart to heart. And Issan Reyu has always been that for me. He lived from 771 to 853 in China. And he appears in so many cases in various collections, about 15 in the Mumonkan and Blue Cliff Hekigan Roku combined, in the Book of Serenity, in the Rinzai Roku, and 10 cases in Katoshu, Entangling Vines. So, what will I do with the rest of my life now that 100 cases of the Iron Flute have come to conclusion? I think you will hear more about Issan. There's plenty of material. So he lived, as I think I might have said, from 771 to 853, and became a monk at 15, at the age of 15, and went to Hyakujo's place, Hyakujo Ekai Zenji, when he was 22. So the story of his awakening is this. One night, Hyakujo went into the zendo. Seemed empty, but he saw a single monk sitting and asked, "Who is it? Who are you?" Reyu Isan replied. Yakujo said, "It's cold. Rake the coals in the stove." Isan went over and raked. Couldn't find any embers. Yakujo went, took the tongs and raking deep down, brought up a tiny ember, showing it to Isan. He said, "What is this?" "Are you awake?" "No." Digging deep down, that's what we're doing, each of us, to that kernel of fire within. They spent 20 years together. Isan became Yakujo's Dharma heir. And he served as Tenzo at the monastery. Some of you are familiar with case 40 of the Mumonkan, the gateless barrier. One day, a soothsayer said to Yakujo, "There's an auspicious site on Mount Hai for a new monastery. Why don't you find a founder among your monks?" Yakujo wanted to go. The soothsayer said, "No. You don't have the right physique." "Okay," Yakujo decided, "I'll test my monks and see who should be the founder." What did he do? Some of you know this story so well. He took a water jug and he put it on the floor. And he said, "You may not call this a water jug. What will you call it?" The head monk came forth and said, "You can't call it a wooden shoe," or sometimes it's translated as, "You can't call it a stump." Isan came forward, kicked it over, and went out, returning to his work in the Tenzo. "Okay, take off your head wrap as Tenzo and put on the iron yoke of founding a monastery. What do you think, Togon?" Probably Isan also shook his head quietly and to himself, but hi. He went off to the mountain, climbed up, up, up through dense wilderness to to the top. And who did he find there? Not a single person. Okay, I have to found a monastery. I alone am here. Okay. And he started sitting. And he sat, 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 and he sat. 8 years went by. Finally, feeling so unworthy of his teacher's trust, he said, I have to leave. As he started down the mountain, someone knows this part. You do? Go ahead. A tiger came, barred his way, took his sleeve, and pulled him back up the mountain. Okay, Isan said. Abandoning all hopes. This is the important thing for us to remember. Okay, it's me and the tiger. He just returned to his solitary practice. And a couple of days later, three monks appeared. And then more. And more. Until finally, there were 1,500 monks training at his new monastery. So here we are in this beautifully established monastery. 47 years old. And I know that not just the 42 or so people here at this session, but the uncountable people at session after session after session have experienced what Isan felt. Frustration. Despair. Agony. Dejection. Abjection. Objection. Nothing I do seems to work. Has anyone ever had that sense? I've tried everything. I'm unworthy of sitting here in pain and frustration. I might as well leave. Hopeless. Yes, we must become hopeless. And then what? A tiger comes, right? Yes. Within each of us is this tiger spirit. It says, okay, one more sitting. I'll give it until lunch. Oh, well. Might as well try supper time to see how it goes. Oh yeah, I don't have a car. Might as well just stick it out. Ugh. And as you know, things change. Your heart changes. And you take everyone's sleeves into your mouth. Come on, let's go. Right back into the Zendo. So one of the monks training under Isan was Kyozan Ejaku. With whom he founded the Igyo school. Igyo combines the first characters of their names, Isan and Kyozan, sometimes with a K, but Gyozan is pronounced for Igyo. Igyo was, this school was the first of the five houses of Tang Dynasty, Chan, Zen, first of the five houses. And it was also the most esoteric. Yesterday we heard a wonderful talk that led us to Isan today and the Igyo school and to Obon, which is soon upon us. Vairochana Buddha, great light, numinous, luminous, the six realms, which we cycle through. And now have this incredible fortune. Remember the story about how it is that you have come to human birth? How rare? Can you tell us? Aside from the dirt under your fingernail? Huh? What's the story? Thousand-year-old turtle comes up to the surface of the ocean very rarely, maybe once in 100 years. Just this time happens to put his head through a round hole in a floating stick. That's how rare it is to receive human birth. So, as we heard yesterday, not to be squandered, huh? Who knows what might be next time around? Cockroach? One of those asuras? Or a deva? A god? Oh, I don't have anything to worry about. Whatever. Humans care. Care. Anyway, this Igyo school is the most esoteric of the five houses and uses various sacred symbols, and in particular, 97 circles, each pointing to the mystical union of all beings throughout space and time. And these circles originated with, does anybody know? The sixth ancestor, Wei Nong. Yes. Enno, in Japanese. They were a part of a secret text that was passed down to Enno's heir, Chu Kokushi, who in turn gave them to his Dharma descendant, Tongen Oshin, with whom Kyozan practiced, and then left him. And Kyozan came to Isan. So you're already in this circle, right? You're keeping track? Yeah? Where are we? And asked Isan, what is the true abode of Buddha? Isan replied, think of the unfathomable. Or as Daito Kokushi put it, face the inconceivable 24 hours a day. That's what we're doing. All those fathomable thoughts, why would you spend another second with them? Think of the unfathomable. Return your thoughts, he said, to the inexhaustible, numinous light. Ah, Tadipa. And then Isan said to Kyozan, when all thoughts are exhausted, you've arrived at the source where true nature is revealed, eternally abiding. That place where there is no difference between noumena and phenomena, between essence and the 10,000 things, is the true abode of Buddha. And Kyozan experienced a great awakening. Now you might ask, why, when I hear those words, did I not experience such an awakening? And to quote Eido Roshi, readiness of time. How about synchronicity? How about this moment? How about your readiness that you don't trust? Huh? Are ready. Yes? Yes? Ready. Right here. Always being revealed. And of course we are skeptical. We are caught up And in being caught up, we think, ah, that secret, it's somewhere. It's in that text. I want that text. Give it to me. I want the answers to my problematic life. But just exhaust your thoughts. Listen. So, Isan, having established this monastery, wrote a poem on the wall of his room. And it starts, 10 square feet of Isan. We can understand it as referring to his room, but simultaneously to his mind, his being, his functioning. Yesterday, Chigan Roshi spoke of the room name of his ordination teacher, Denkyo Shitsu Kyozan Choshu Sasaki Roshi, under whom he practiced for many years. The ceremony of Shitsugo, which is the conferring of this room name, properly occurs some years after transmission. And it's when we receive the title of Roshi and also receive a room name. So, Denkyo Shitsu. Mui Shitsu Edo Roshi. My name, Shingei Shitsu Roko. Or sometimes the word is cave. The room name is Kutsu, as in Mitakutsu Soen Roshi. And who else? Gembo. And who else? And who else? Soryukutsu and oh, being so modest. Thank you. So we have a room name, or a cave name, or sometimes a hut name, like Choro An Yogen, Senzaki An is hut. So the size of Isan's room, very interesting, 10 square feet. It's less than a meter square. About the size of this sabutan, right? It's not really big enough to stretch out, is it? It's perfect for zazen. And some of you may recall the story about Hakuin at his little temple in Hara. near Mount Fuji, Shōinji. Tōre-enji, in his chronology of Hakuin's life, tells us, when darkness fell, he would climb inside a derelict palanquin. What's a palanquin?
Huh? A carriage.
Yeah, you can get a ride. Instead of having to walk for 20 days, you know, if you have the money, you get somebody to carry you on a palanquin. Right. Well, there was a derelict palanquin at Shōinji. Probably wouldn't have held anything, any weight at all, if it were lifted. But he would climb inside it and seat himself on a thick cushion he placed on the floorboard. The young boys studying at Shōinji would then come, wrap a futon around the master's body, and cinch him tightly into this position with a rope. There he would remain without moving until the following day, when the boys would come and untie him. That went on every night. That's Zazen. Once we sit down, that's it. This spirit. Each of us on our zabuton, in our small zazen room. You remember we chanted on July 4th, third day of session, faith in mind, Sōsan Zenji's verse. Infinitely small things are as large things can be, for here no external conditions obtain. Infinitely small things are as large. Okay, I said that. Infinitely large things are as small things can be. For objective limits are here of no consideration. Remember? Probably you recited that and you're like, huh? Well, in a talk at Mount Baldy, published in a collection that was recently brought out called Manifesting Zen, which I believe is in our bookstore, Josho Sasaki Roshi spoke of Zen practice as a process of expansion and contraction. From the vastness of no self to the infinitely small. And I quote, where all of the universe is condensed into a point smaller than a mustard seed. There is no longer any outside or inside. And likewise, we can say this about the infinitely large. There is no outside and no inside. So, Isan's verse. That room, 10 square feet, brimming, pulsating with condensed energy, minute particles in a dance. Just like those leaves out there just like the birds calling to each other. The cells of our bodies in continuous communication and complexity, each affecting the other, all in perfect reciprocity. So we go on with Isan's verse. The second and third lines, it's impossible to climb the steep cliff of his Dharma. Too steep to climb up. Anyone who can enter, what does Fugai say? Watch your step. Will you enter, willing to entangle your eyebrows with Isan? It requires great courage to enter the tiger's cave, Isan's room. And then his fourth line, anyone who can enter will become a great general. If you are face to face, general to general, when you enter, you meet not only Isan, but Fugai says,
do not forget there is another great general.
The most important great general. Who is that?
You.
Daishin becoming Isan, becoming Daishin. So here's a question for you. I know that nobody is going to do graffiti on the walls in the room at this monastery, but what would you write? What would be your elemental expression of this? Well, give it some non-thought and see what you come up with. I was contemplating this and came up with another haiku. Without me, dawn comes. Birds conduct morning service. Thunderstorm rolls in. So then I received an email from a former resident. Some of you remember Takako-san? And she's now back in Japan after a short visit here. She writes, "How are you, Shinge Roshi? I'm aware that you are going to step down from the Zen Studies Society soon. Not knowing why it's October 1st, though. Okay to describe it's paradoxical? Customarily, I'd think of Eido Roshi on October 1st. Then next day, on October 2nd, is Shinge Roshi." So, parentheses, I give you the pragmatic reason. When thinking about all this, people agreed that we shouldn't do it on the 2nd because it's a Monday. And maybe people are staying on from Golden Wind session or coming up here just for the day. Better Sunday than Monday. Okay, that's the pragmatic reason. But what's the fundamental reason? Because Eido Roshi's birthday is October 1st. We've always celebrated together, even in difficult times. There would be a phone call from me to him, and then the next day from him to me. He installed me as abbot on 1-1-1-1. And now he'll see me out on 1-0-0-1-2-3. Wonderful. Anyway, Takako-san continued, "Somebody like me wouldn't be able to even imagine what your past 12 years was like." Me either. "I sincerely hope you are doing well and in good spirits. Mahatma Gandhi was born on October 2nd, too. So was Brigitte Bardot. So many important people I've met in the past whose birthdays are in the beginning of October, including Nyogen Senzaki, whose adoptive parents gave him the birthday of Bodhidharma Day, October 5th. And then she wrote, "My practice on the wall." What? She had no idea I would be doing this koan. What did she write on the wall? She quoted Gandhi. "Your beliefs become your thoughts. Your thoughts become your words. Your words become your actions. Your actions become your habits. Your habits become your values. Your values become your destiny." Wow. So, back to Isan's poem with Fugai's interjections. 10 square feet of Isan. When was it built? When was this room built? That's a challenge, right? What about here and now? How big? How old? How told is more. And he says, after too steep to climb up, it's okay, don't worry about it. I was thinking, though, of the first time I went to Yutakuji, climbing up that incredibly long gravel and stone steps, gravel. The steps are a little too far apart to really get one foot after another. Very difficult. Such beautiful surroundings, but long, steep way up to reach the temple buildings. But Fugai says, I can walk right in as though it were flat. Ah, okay. And the next comment he makes, watch your step. I'm sure you've noticed in the Genkan where the double doors are, there's a small board. And this is true of most temples in Japan at the main entrance. What's it say? Watch. Your step. Or, what do you want? What are you doing here? How will you conduct yourself? Better watch out. Now, Umpo knew of Isan's poem. And evidently, he recited it to his monks with great admiration. Umpo Bunetsu. He lived from 998 to 1062. But not much more than that is known about him. Unless Chigan Roshi has a special footnote. No. Anyway, he says, oh, Isan was a born Zen master. And then Fugai says,
Applesauce.
This is Nyogen Senzaki's translation of whatever Fugai said. But I might say, hogwash. Oh, he's a born Zen master. Come on. And then a monk comes forward and challenges Umpo. He says, well, what about you? What poem would you write for your room? And he answers. But before he can even say his poem, immediately Fugai,
imitator.
Good, you caught up. And indeed, he uses the same structure for that first line, but he doesn't use his own name. He uses that of another master, Suigan Reisan. We don't know his birth or death dates, but we do know he was a Dharma heir, one of the Dharma heirs of Seppo Gison, who lived from 822 to 908. So most likely he would have died before Umpo's time. Now, Suigan. Familiar to somebody?
Dangling eyebrows.
Yeah. Suigan Reisan Yes, he is known from a very famous koan in the Blue Cliff Record, the Hekigan Roku, Case 8. Suigon's eyebrows. I can give you the tiny version. His teacher, Seppo, was away. It was summertime. He was the head monk, and he was giving talks all summer. So he asked the assembly, his brother monks, "Do I still have my eyebrows?" That expression, if you speak on the Dharma without true understanding, or if you talk too much, if you give too much away, what happens? The eyebrows fall off. I don't know why, but they're still here. So he asks this question, have I been giving too much? And what does his brother monk Hofuku say?
They're even bushier.
Not Hofuku. He says, thief. Not only are you not giving too much, but you have admirably been stealing from us. And Choke says,
they're even bushier.
They've grown. Yeah. Bushy eyebrows. Upon bushy eyebrows. What are you worried about? You got them. And then, here's the crucial point of this koan. Omon says,
Khan!
Literally, you could translate it like barrier, Momon Khan, but far beyond any such literal translation. This is the quintessence of Omon, Omon's Khan. He has so many, many, many wonderful sayings. We meet him in koan after koan, but nothing matches this. How can you pass through? Well, someone did, named Kanzan Egen, which you may be familiar with because we chant it every evening. He received his name because of his great enlightenment with this Omon's Khan and became the founder of Myoshinji. In our Teidai Denpo, the bell rings every time the country changes. From the Chinese ancestors to the three great pioneers of Japanese Zen in Japan, Japanese Zen, Rinzai Zen, known together as O-to-kan. O is from Daiyo Kokushi. In our lineage, Nam Po Shomyo, his honorary title, Daiyo Kokushi. And then, To, Dai To Kokushi, Shuhomyo Cho, his honorary title. And then, Kansa, Kansa, again. Chūho Myōcho's student when he penetrated Kan. So we, tonight, will think of them as we chant their names. Nam Po Sho Myo Zenji Shu Ho Myo Cho Zenji Kan Zan Negen Zenji. So let's get back to this koan. Umpo offers a poem in Suigon's place. Suigon, who retained his eyebrows. And he writes, 10 square feet of Suigon. Is it imitation? Or is it intimacy? We have to really look into this. We think we have to make something up. It's already. It's already ours. So he goes on. Never had a door. What is the door? Gateless. Never had a door. Wide open. Might say, oh, then it's easy to get inside. What does Fugai say?
Difficult to enter.
Difficult to enter. A door is open. Come on in. But watch out. Any monk who goes in there.
Walking on the edge of a sword.
Are you ready? The invitation stands. How will you walk in on the edge of a sword? Any monk who comes in immediately sees Suigon. There he is. Doors wide open. But Fugai says,
skating on ice.
Yeah, wow. You're skating on ice. Hard to keep your footing in this room. So then, the monk does a prostration and stands. And Umpo asks him, did you see Suigon? In other words, what makes you bow? Right there is.
There is barbed wire all around.
The monk hesitates.
I told you he could not enter.
And Umpo hits the monk's mouth with his hosu.
There, the door is open.
Now it's open. Mm. Genro comments and presents his own poem. Isson's room is hard to see, but easy to enter. Suigon's room is easy to see. Hard to enter. I also have a poem in my room, he says. Emptiness has neither in nor out. If there is neither in nor out, I ask you, monks, how can you enter?
I would not enter that room.
Joshu Roshis, where all of the universe is condensed into a point smaller than a mustard seed, there is no longer any outside or inside. And likewise, we can say this about the infinitely large. There is no outside and no inside. How can you enter? And his concluding verse, which is very appropriate to our anniversary session. He says, even a steep cliff has toeholds. Even the steepest teaching has some way in when your mind is not filled with extraneous affairs. Yet watch out. When you think, now I've got it. I'm on nice flat ground. What happens? There's a tiger trap. The third line of Genro's verse. Each established his monastery according to his home routine. Simple daily practice, each in his own 10-foot square, or hakuin in his palanquin. Just coming from this home routine. Functioning, acting. This is where Fugai says,
one has to do foolish acts to save others.
Acting from compassion for all beings, like Suigon's giving talks every time he stood before his brother monks. Like each of us giving talks on this stand or tatami. Such foolish acts. After all, what can be said? Words cannot express the real nature of the universe, the Diamond Sutra says in 32 chapters of words. Yet here we are. Golden deeds gleam even now.
Generation after generation carries troubles endlessly.
Willingly, we take up the troubles. We dig in to the koans. We dauntlessly investigate our life koans. We get caught up in the weeds and brambles, just as Daito Kokushi said in his verse on Zen, the Buddha has playfully let words escape his golden mouth. Heaven and earth are ever since filled with entangling briars. So we return, again and again to these troubles. And we offer ourselves again and again on our 10 square feet of practice. Golden deeds. This is our great vows manifesting. Having received this rare human form, let us give ourselves completely with our great vows.